I get goosebumps when I remember what SAA went through. And then now, 2 weeks ago, they recorded, what is the financial term? A profit, right? You see, planes are on the air. Some routes are coming back. Eskom is powering ahead. Are we at a point where we can say that our SOEs can be empowered so that they are capable of executing all these grand plans at scale?
The distance has been traveled, but there's still quite a distance to get through still. You know, many of these were left with big amounts of debt on their backs because of the kinds of leakages that they saw. And so there's still a lot of work to be done and a lot of support that will still need to be given. But I think the bigger question will have to be that, do people, ordinary people, business people, believe that this progress is actually sustainable? And that really speaks to this kind of leadership that you're talking about. I think most people will say, is this something that's going to be sustained? Or is it one of those things in South Africa where we see an upswing and then things change?
Hello, everyone. Hello. Welcome to the Readiness Report with me, Redikabi, and the Daily Maverick. This episode is made possible by the generosity and investment of the Friedrich Neumann Foundation. It's good to be with you. Okay, we've all been listening to Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana, and a lot of these numbers and maths and stuff, sometimes they go over my head, and I need a little help interpreting what it all means. So it's budget day in South Africa, that annual moment when the country, I think, collectively holds its breath while the Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana stands up in Parliament and tells us if we broke or not, how disciplined. How disciplined we have to be or not. So the national budget has been presented. And if you are like me, and you sometimes find yourself confused by terms like primary surplus, fiscal consolidation, debt to GDP, don't worry, we're going to simplify this and just understand what it all means. I have brought my friend, that's another disclaimer, right? I've brought my friend, he's a nerd, I love nerds, Kanti Pai, economist, and he's the founder and the boss at Inani Strategies. Kanti, sawubona molo.
I'm honored. It's very, very good to be with you, man. It's a really exciting day as well.
Yeah, for you nerds, it's an exciting day. They're not supposed to like, Okay, what does it all mean, your impressions of budget 2026?
You know, really, I think, it's been a good day, had this conversation. And I think because part of our big, big problem has really been, I think, two things, credibility being one very, very key thing. And also, and we've been struggling for that, and certainly optimism. And I think in this budget, we're able to actually bring those two things that are really quite critical in terms of what actually budgets are supposed to do. They're really, really supposed to actually inject a level of credibility in terms of, you know, the public about what their state of affairs is in terms of public finances, but also those other stakeholders that may think of us, for example, as investors and other interested people who may be donors and everybody else who looks at South Africa with interest. And they look at our finances and they say, you know what? Actually, these people are still worth a second look, that there's still some work that can be done here and there's something that can be achieved. And I think we did that very, very well today. And it adds really to some of the other positive indicators that have come before today.
Okay, so one thing that I saw in the theme for this year, Kanti, was that South Africa is what? At a turning point. And I've been trying to give meaning to that. Okay, fine. So debt is stabilizing. That's what he meant. The 20 billion tax hike is withdrawn. Infrastructure spending is accelerating. What is a turning point? What is your understanding of what the minister was getting us to?
I think many people have seen us as in decline. South Africa has been in decline for quite some time. And I think nobody can really deny that. If you think about the decline that we've seen at SOEs and therefore the infrastructure that some of these SOEs manage, on behalf of the public, we've seen obviously finances, debt, of course, growth being stuck at very low levels, and we are unable to get unstuck from that. We know our problems around unemployment and that structural nature of unemployment. We've certainly had a really negative politic, and we've seen that. And I think at this time last year, we had a really, really different discussion about where we were. So that kind of thing, when we're thinking about it, then when you say you have a turning point, you're saying, if we look at everything that has come behind us and we look at the moment that we are now facing, it does look like, you know, we've turned a corner and we are able actually to look at things differently.
Yeah, and then inflation down 3.2%. Did I get that right?
Correct. And that actually speaks also to the credibility. Remember, inflation has been a very, very difficult thing. And the conversation around inflation and the Reserve Bank has been a particularly difficult conversation. You know, we've had conversations around nationalizing the central bank, who owns it. And, you know, is inflation targeting still the right thing to do? What should that target be? And it seems that those questions now seem to be at least quietened down and perhaps not quietened down, but, you know, or settled. But certainly that people are starting to get comfortable about that direction. We see inflation now very, very low. These numbers usually look like monthly numbers. So month-on-month numbers tend to be very low. And it's usually the year-on-year when we compare the year that we see numbers are quite high. So to see 3%, 3.2%, those numbers we usually see when things are really, really good. So this having settled here, again, it's a note on credibility that can we trust that these guys can stand here and actually maintain this low inflation rate? And that actually is also work that has to be done from the budget itself, that the budget does not become very buoyant, that we are actually overspending, because that can affect, of course, prices and inflation. So.
Let's just talk about growth, growth. And I know one of the buzzwords, even during the Mbeki presidency, was that, jobless growth. We need 6% to start to grow at 6% in order to start creating jobs. And now, when growth is projected in 2026 at 1.6% next year, rising to 2% by 2028, for a country like South Africa that is desperate for growth, it doesn't sound a very positive picture. However, given the global dynamics, our own infrastructure challenges, and you mentioned SOEs, the minister also spent time talking about attempts to just breathe some life into those SOEs. Operation Vulindlela, we're starting to see some of the positive outcomes manifest. But this projected growth, in the context of everything that has happened, how would you define it?
It's a very important question, really. And I think and the way we approach that question is important. First, we know that growth by itself, and I think people have always talked about this idea of jobless growth. It's not true that actually in those years there was jobless growth, but certainly we're not as, we didn't see as much growth, jobs as we would have liked to see, because we wanted obviously everybody packed into into the working environment. Certainly what we know about growth is that by itself certainly does not translate, it doesn't trickle down into jobs, into the common person. But what does happen, though, is that it's a very good indicator of investment. So usually people look at that number and they say, if a country like, we hear, for example, our countries like Kenya, Nigeria, these are emerging countries are growing at high numbers. And then people hear that, they tend to think, well, there's a place I can put my money in because my money is going to grow. So everybody takes that as a tone that actually changes their mind about a particular country, a particular area. And therefore, they go and invest there. And that's what growth really is important about, because it actually is the one driver of investment into particular countries and certainly particular geographies. So what we want to do is that we want to actually drive it at that tone. And so when you look at a country like South Africa, where we had 0.9%, then it's 1.2%, and we sort of think 1.82%, that trajectory of growth actually achieves in many ways that same kind of undertone. That actually the country is growing, that actually it's opening up for investment. And therefore, that is the kind of thing that we want, is that while we're not going to see the 5% anytime now, but it does actually boost the confidence of investors to say that something is building there. And therefore, there's something that there's growth in the environment. So may not be shooting the lights out, and it's important to say that, but it is something that they can look towards to say they are pickings. And also, that many astute investors, as they look at the 2%, they go down to the sectors, because obviously you don't just come in and sort of throw money at, as you land in the aeroplane. You look for different sectors and you say maybe there's agriculture, there's mining. And those indicators are important, because then they can look at the subsectors and look at those and say, I actually think that's important. So what I think is important then on the back of that is the indications around this growth, where is it going to come from as we see it grow? And we hear a lot of good work around infrastructure, and private investment and attracting investment and allowing investment and private investors to come in. We're thinking about those kinds of things, and we start to talk about credibility. So these are the kinds of things, and obviously lower inflation, because we say, if you make your money, it's not going to disappear into a rising prices. We're thinking about taxes that's stabilizing debt, that government is actually going to pull back a little bit and open the private sector to play its role. And so those kinds of indicators are important because outside of just that growth number, we are also talking about a level of openness and attracting that kind of investment. That then leads to the jobs that we need. And so that's what we are talking about, is that then you are opening the pathway directly then into the mm-hmm. jobs environment. So it doesn't in itself growth become important. It's about all of
those. I do want us to expand a little bit on the infrastructure, whether that this is now the real pivot. I want us to talk about municipal reform because it is it's a bugbear. It is just an overwhelming challenge. And the minister talked about their ability to spend money, the money returning to treasury because they don't have the capacity or the will or whatever it is to spend. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I do want to just break this down to what this budget means for households. Let's just create an educational moment for households listening right now. Food prices, interest rates, service delivery, in a nutshell. I don't know if it can be done in a nutshell. These are complex issues.
No, they're not that. So I was saying earlier to say, one of the key things that everybody I hear from is, what does it mean for me? And I think that's an important tone to any budget, right? I mean, my mother was sending me messages. Okay, cool. What does it mean? What must I be excited about?
My grandmother used to do that. And it was Trevor Manuel those years, right? This is
exactly. So that's exactly the issue. So there are a number of things when you think about households and, you know, individuals. One of the things that maybe we can start here, what was a big fallout last year was around taxes. That taxes mm-hmm. had gone up and people were really, really unhappy about that because there's been a lot of struggle in households. Inflation has been high. So basically, whatever income you had, was being worn down by the rising prices at the rate that they were rising. We see that has come down. And then the minister says, what we're going to do also within that context is that we are going to try and say that, you know, tax brackets are going to be adjusted so that whatever increase you get from your employer, that may be, you know, your performance related because you've done well at work, or that may be related to inflation, that we don't capture that. Because usually what happens is that many people will earn a little bit more because they get an increase. And that ordinarily puts them into a different tax bracket, a higher tax bracket, and suddenly you are paying more tax. So you thought we were getting an increase, but in fact, actually, we end up with less. And so what that does is to adjust that so that whatever little you get, you actually get to keep for yourself. Now, really, that's why I think this budget is particularly strategically nuanced in the sense that it allowed for some of the questions to be answered in terms of what people actually have been caring about. I know we'll talk about our infrastructure, for example, a little bit later. So people have saying we really, really care about, some of the money being kept by us, because there's always that discussion about in whose hands is our money best settled? Is it in the hands of the government or is it in the hands of, you know, ordinary people, households? And I think it says here, we want to give as much of that into your hands so that you can be more productive, so you can actually buy the things that you need to buy. Perhaps invest in, you know, extra room in your house if you want to. And that actually is a really good extender or incitement in terms of growth. So that's one area in terms of taxes. Certainly, he also talks about some of the, you know, and the margins at which he's increasing our sin taxes. This year we don't see
that one.
We don't see them as much. You know, he says, yes. Exactly, just small adjustments there. And those small adjustments are good because they're also saying, we're also really worried about the fact that we've been taxing people for, you know, for their cigarettes, for their alcohol, for their sugar. But is that actually achieving what we think? Because we're now seeing an illicit market that's growing quite quickly as people turn away from this. Because obviously, these are their vices, these are their, you know, crutches, as it were, for some people. And in that sense, for some people, and so that is important, so that people don't turn into the illicit market where it's more dangerous. So you think the government always thinks we are fixing it here by, you know, pricing you out of these goods, and then people find themselves actually smoking illegal cigarettes and dangerous alcohol, and that is the kind of thing that is starting to happen. So they're very careful to also keep that as low as possible and actually keep people making those choices by themselves. Again, very important that we have that in mind. And that is something that's important. And then, you know, and then giving people those kinds of breaks. And the minister even says, you know, I'm giving money you back, money into your hands to make your own decision.
Right.
So most people are going to find that they have a little bit more in their hands. And of course, we didn't do what we said we would do about VAT. Remember last year we said we would, okay, fine, we will only increase it a little bit, and then we will increase it a little bit more this year. Now that we're not doing anymore, we're holding that back. And that again says, if you are getting an increase, you're not going to spend it on, you know, extra on taxes, that is going to be able to keep it. So I think that tone to say that we are giving consumers money in their hands to keep, that the government does not get to actually make all of the decisions about how our expenditure, our income actually gets to provide growth and to provide the comforts that we need, is very important.
So let's go then to municipal reform. And I feel like we can't quite divorce that conversation from the structural intervention. I know we're going to get into SOEs in just a moment. It's a local government election year, right? The reforms that are suggested there, can national government realistically enforce structural intervention without triggering political resistance? Can service delivery we hear it all the time, even in the president's State of the Nation address. Right. And I'm now a woman in my late 40s. I just remember even when I started as an intern reporter, the fact that municipalities were stressed, every Auditor General's report, one after another, giving us some very frightening statistics about which municipalities are quite capable or not capable or not rising to the occasion. We see South Africa, the economic hub of the subcontinent, Johannesburg, buckling under the burden of a water crisis. What's happening at municipal level? If the needs are so glaring and they're so stark, why are municipalities not spending, unable to, or unwilling to spend the money? And what happens to it? What does the picture look like there?
Sure. Maybe I think this is an important question, and I think many people we've been stuck in this. And luckily, you know, the framers of the Constitution had a sense that we could get to something like this, where basically, you know, we could have the kinds of tensions that we have between local government and national government, and that there are some powers that are really in the hands of national government because of the actually, you know, by the fact that the national government is able to tax a little bit more than what you can find at the local space. And there's some of the changes I think that we are seeing in the local environment in terms of local governments themselves being able to actually tax. And for ordinary people and local government, especially the poor local municipalities that don't have their own capacity to increase revenue, they don't charge, for example, for the poor in those municipalities where there are a lot of people who are unemployed. So that's an important question, because then it says, how does then government, given that national government has the power, for example, to distribute grants into local municipalities for infrastructure, for water infrastructure, for energy infrastructure, and other grants, for example, for capacity building, how do they intervene in that important sense? And also, how do you make sure that actually the effect that, you know, the spending itself is actually effective and that it actually delivered what it's supposed to do? What I think is really important is that in this budget, that is a glaring, clear focus to say, look, we clearly see that capacity in local government is not something that we have. That, you know, it is not the capacity to spend properly, appropriately. So the idea that money can be spent, money can definitely be spent, when we've seen it being spent and allocated badly. And sometimes we have something called unfunded budgets or mandates, where basically the government, the local government, you know, puts together a budget and for all a wish list, as it were. But then they make it a budget, and then it's not funded, and people are starting to spend illegally, is it true? So I think what this budget does is to say, look, we are going to give grants that are specific to the needs that are really common amongst South Africans and actually speaks to the needs of a particular municipality. I talk, for example, about the poor municipalities that are not able, for example, to invest in their own infrastructure because they don't raise as much revenue in electricity. They don't raise as much revenue in water, because the people that are maybe indigent for the most part. So how do we actually inject money? But then also what we are seeing is a change, really, and this is in the detail, in climate. You know, climate impacts are something that's quite serious, where there's a lot of damage in infrastructure because of floods and the rest of it. Again, how do we empower municipalities? And how do we make sure that we empower them with the right skills that are necessary? So it's not just the ability to spend, but to be able to have the people who can plan and strategically actually implement some of the changes that we need. So, and that's important, because the minister highlights this when he says, we've always have this thing that We always kick against, spending that's not capital spending. When we're saying we're not investing, so we're spending it on the budget, on salaries. But we need to spend on salaries because that's where we pay engineers, that's where we pay doctors, that's where we pay builders and architects and plumbers, because those are the people who would actually help us deliver the services. And so how do we actually support municipalities to get those services and to keep them and to make sure that they can deliver those services? And those supports is important because it speaks to their capacity that we can deliver.
My Africa protects my democratic rights.
My Africa gives equality for all.
My Africa gives me the right to play.
The right not to be tortured.
The right to be born equal and free.
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 Let's talk human rights.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about our SOEs. You know, I think that it was very important for the minister to spend time giving us the background, the context, because sometimes we forget how bad things were.
Absolutely.
No, I get goosebumps when I remember what SAA went through. And then now 2 weeks ago, they recorded, what is the financial term? A profit, right? You see planes are on the air. Some routes are coming back. Eskom is powering ahead. I'm sure there are problems. There was a policy tension with the Minister of Electricity making a different pronouncement in December, the president emphatic and clarifying what the unbundling of Eskom is going to look like. PRASA, the minister spent some time talking about PRASA, even SARS. I mean, when he gave that very sweet tribute to our friend Edward Kiswetter, he really didn't just thank him for his service, but he talked about the environment, that kind of that milieu from which we come, the environment from which we come and what it has taken to rebuild. And I really think that the story of Operation Vulindlela, of course, business will want to claim it as its own, but the genesis is actually in government, during Tito Mboweni's time. And it is a positive story, really, and a microcosm of what could happen a reflection of what could happen if you get this kind of private sector participation, government leadership, visionary leadership, getting the talent, the right talent in SOUs and in governments. So I suppose the question is, are we at a point where we can say that our SOEs can be empowered so that they are capable of executing all these grand plans at scale?
That's an important question. And I think that one of the key things that are important to consider here is certainly that the distance has been traveled, but there's still quite a distance to get through still. Many of these were left with big amounts of debt on their backs because of the kinds of leakages that they saw. And so there's still a lot of work to be done and a lot of support that will still need to be given. But I think the bigger question will have to be that do people, ordinary people, business people, believe that this progress is actually sustainable? And that really speaks to this kind of leadership that we're talking about. I think most people will say, is this something that's going to be sustained? Or is it one of those things in South Africa where we see an upswing and then things change? So if you think about electricity, for example, we have been really, there hasn't been a lot of these power cuts that we suffered for so long. So people are doing better now in terms of their household electricity, their small businesses, their big businesses. But the question is, do people trust that this will last so that they could add, for example, an extra room if you have a bed and breakfast, and an extra extra space in your factory to make sure that you produce a little bit more? Is this something that people are confident is here to stay? Now, that's a big question, and that will speak to really the sustainability of this and how people actually are going to look closer. So it is it is important to recognize that really Operation Vulindlela has really opened up the path. But is that wide enough for people to feel comfortable to take those extra steps to move forward, to say, look, I can now actually invest a little bit more in South Africa because these things can be sustained, so that I don't have to think about if the economy starts to grow, Eskom may not be able to sustain the extra demand in electricity. That Transnet may not be able to sustain the extra need for logistics if the mining sector starts to, if I invest in the mine. So that is really now the next thing that we have to look out for. And I think a lot of people have to look out for, and how we talk to, as we speak to businesses, that's the kind of language that they are starting to use to say, look, yes, we've seen the positive thing. Now we want to see if these things can be sustained so that actually we can put ourselves at that kind of risk. And that is an important part, and I suspect that is something that most people are actually now getting themselves used to. And a budget like this that actually says we are investing more and we are speaking to, this budget speaks to the idea that, you know, private-public partnerships are going to be important, that we are going to listen to people who are coming with ideas and want to invest their own money alongside that of government. And we're going to listen to those proposals. And actually, there's a framework in which we can actually work that without, you know, people feeling uncomfortable, for example, about the players in the public sector system that has actually created a lot of discomfort for many investors. So that is something that we are looking toward as a positive, but that is probably time will tell if actually government has gone enough in this budget to be able to give that kind of comfort.
I just want to go to something else, you know, before we just wrap up, you know, the debt service cost. It's quite a big thing. I remember, was it last year when South Africa went to the World Bank or IMF?
Yes.
There was some you know, obviously we don't like it when we hear that our government is borrowing money, but you and I know that governments all over the world money, sure. And that the terms are unfair globally against African countries, global South countries, where we spend so much money servicing the debt rather than paying for health and education and so on. And yet favorable terms are given to first world countries. And often when you speak debt, people have the African continent in their minds, but first world countries also borrow from yes. the World Bank and the IMF, like I said. But debt, you know, debt service costs, even in our personal budgets, can constitute that silent drain. And the question becomes, can you afford to service or finance that debt? Debt service costs are projected to fall from 21.3% of revenue to 20.2%. I'd just like you, in really simple layman's term, to position a debt in the on the national budget. People hear debt and they think, oh, we are borrowing and we're in trouble and so on. What is the magic here when it comes to a country's management of its debt? Right.
It's very much similar to the kind of thing that we all have in our personal budget, is that you have an income and then you say, look, do I have enough? Does my income match my needs, so my spending? And often it doesn't. And then we have to go out there and we have to borrow to be able to actually match that up. And the key, though, is that we always have to be mindful. And many of us make this calculation that even though I don't have the money today, if I project my income into the future, I will be able to actually to repay this debt. So yes, today I'm earning, you know, 10,000 Rand and I'm going to need a credit card, you know, of 2,000 Rand to be able, of 2,000 Rand to be able to finance the rest of my expenditure, you know, whether I need to buy a car or I need to do something else. I'm going to be able to pay that off because I'm going to get a certain increase. I'm productive. I'm young. I'm hardworking. So I'm going to be able to do that. And that's what governments also have to do, right? So that's why they project the growth rates that they do, because they're projecting their own capacity to be able to pay in the future should they borrow that to meet today's needs. And that's very much the same thing. What is always important, of course, is the credibility. Is that, do I believe you? Do I believe that Reedy has the capacity to grow and actually be somebody that people are willing to pay a little bit more? Usually in our private lives, you know, if you're an accountant, you've got a qualification, that might be an indicator. For governments like ours, one of the key indicators is sometimes what we've already done. So they look at your credit record. In South Africa, one of the things we've been able to do in the past 2 years at least is to say, we can show that we have this primary budget, which means if you exclude our debt and our debt repayments, and you just look at us being able to just, you know, from what we have made and what we are spending, we are living a little bit there. So that tells you that at least we can do that, and that what we are trying to do at the same time is to actually repay the debt. So basically inflation has come down. So, you know, interest rates have come down, and therefore we are going to be able to make that. And that confidence is something that's very important, because it brings down those costs. Because the more people believe you can pay them back, the more the less they charge you in terms of interest. And that's what we're also seeing. So South Africa's debt trajectory has been really informed in the past. It's been so expensive and been so, you know, so torturous because of the way that the credibility we didn't have. As we build that credibility looking ahead, things are looking very different. And I think one of the key things that the minister said, again, one of the strategic things that for me comes out, is that he says, we're not going to set fiscal rules. We're not going to put out these kinds of stringent things that you see, for example, in the US, where we say we have a ceiling over which we will not spend, because things are changing. But what are the principles that we can put in front of investors, in front of the public, that says, trust us when we say We're going to manage these things, and therefore you can trust us with your money. And so those principles are the kinds of principles that he says he will announce later in the year, so that we don't actually tie ourselves up in these rules and anchor ourselves to things that may be in an environment where obviously there's a lot of earthquakes and the movement that's happening in front of us. So to answer that question, the debt anchoring is very important. It has been shown, and it's something that's starting to be credible.
I think that's a positive note on which to leave our conversation. I know you are in demand. You are looking absolutely superb. And I look forward to being treated to a beautiful glass of wine when I'm next in Johannesburg.
Bye-bye, yeah, and I didn't hear any. There were no taxes on that were increased. So we're winning.
Siangena. Texas or no Texas again. Thanks, Quanti. Bye-bye, darling.
Thank you.
What's the readiness support, folks?